Okay, so we're continuing the series on the most important journey ever. And I'm going to talk about some surprises today. And before we get into that, the first half of the service, which we've just shared, was arranged by Caroline. And all I said to Caroline, or Tim in fact, was the verses we're going to be looking at. And the prayers and the readings and the songs we've just sung and listened to and read fit unbelievably well with what comes next. Okay, so is that a surprise? Well, it is, kind of.
Did you say I didn't tell Caroline the reading for yesterday?
Okay. Even more surprising then. So it sounds like it should be a surprise that the two halves fit together really well, but actually, who's looking after all of this? You know, it certainly isn't me, and I don't think it's Caroline. No, God is looking after it, and the two halves fit together really well. And the bit we just sang here, the last couple of lines here, "For we know your truth has set us free, you've set your hope in me." And the notion that God knows what we are and what we need and has then sent his truth, Christ, to set us free and put his hope in us. That is, I mean, there's lots to say, but that's kind of the guts of what we're talking about today. And I thought you just ought to know that the two halves, which I hope will, when we get to the end, you'll think they fit together. But that was nothing to do with me, I promise you. Okay. So today is about surprises. Now that might worry you because 2 weeks ago when I was preaching on Palm Sunday, we talked about surprises then. But the Easter story is one monumental surprise. And we'll see more of that today. And today we're going to focus on what the disciples experienced and how difficult they found the whole Easter thing and how confused they were. And then importantly, what Jesus did about that. And if you're feeling puzzled, confused, hurt, upset, in turmoil, then you were like the disciples after Easter. Because they were completely, you know, utterly devastated and confused and puzzled. And yet Jesus came to them and was what they needed. So he knew what they needed, a bit like Psalm 139 that Caroline read. God knows. And he knew what the disciples needed. He knew they were in a complete pickle. And he came and sorted them out in a way which, very gentle and yet utterly powerful. So, surprises. Now, this made me laugh. Okay, so what comes next? Now, some of you are a sneak preview, so no chuckling. Okay, so 3-year-old in a garden centre, what could possibly go wrong? Okay, and you will not guess. Okay, I promise you, you will not have guessed what goes wrong.
Oh, buddy, wait. Okay.
Do you need to see it again?
Oh, buddy, wait. Okay.
Okay, any 3-year-olds? That's what happens. Okay. And
he does come up, does he?
No. Well, he appears in another clip. So here he is. And he's got some Lego in his hand, okay?
It's kind of like a wheel going.
Okay. I've got to show you one more. Okay, my favourite. Okay, so you have to have Star Wars illustrations, all right? So here's another one.
Let's see it, buddy.
Okay. I hope you remember more about the service than just the kid. Surprises. You thought you knew what was coming when you saw the kid run towards the puddle, you know? You thought he might jump in the puddle. Yeah, because that's what kids do. They might knock the flowers over, jump in the puddle, but not to disappear. Okay, which is a much better outcome. But the whole Easter story, we know what happens next, but the disciples didn't. And the story we're going to look at today is part of their surprise and their confusion, and importantly, Jesus' response to that. And Judy's going to come and read that to us now.
Afterwards, Jesus appeared to his disciples by the Sea of Galilee. It happened this way. Simon, Peter, Thomas, also known as Didymus, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, two other disciples were together. "I'm going up to fish," Simon Peter told them. And they said, "We'll come with you." So they went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, "Friends, haven't you any fish?" "No," they answered. He said, "Throw your net on the right side of the boat and you will find some." When they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." As soon as Simon Peter heard this, he said, "It is the Lord." He wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off, and jumped into the water. The other disciples followed in the boat, towing the boat full of fish, for they were not far from the shore, about 100 meters. When they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals there with fish on it, and some bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish you have just caught." Simon Peter climbed aboard and dragged the net ashore. It was full of large fish. But even with so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." None of the disciples dared to ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came, took the bread and gave it to them, and did the same with the fish. This was the third time Jesus appeared to his disciples after he was raised from the dead.
Okay, great. Thanks very much. Okay, that story, possibly familiar, doesn't sound like a particularly big deal. Jesus on the beach, disciples in the boat, some fishing activity going on, and then some breakfast. Doesn't sound that dramatic, partly because it's familiar. And, you know, there's no thunder and lightning, there's no astonishing, you know, healing or anything. Okay, pretty neat fishing, but, you know, that's okay, it's just fish. But we need to understand what the disciples were thinking at this point and why Jesus did what he did. Okay, so let's just roll the clock back a little bit to Palm Sunday. And we've talked about this already, so we're going to go quite quickly here. So this is Matthew 21. Large crowd spread their cloaks on the road while the others cut palm branches from the leaves. And they shout, "Hosanna to the Son of David, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord." Okay? So this is the crowd going nuts, and the disciples are part of this, and they have expectations. They think Jesus is the king, and he's going to be in charge. That's what they expect at that point. Okay, but we know what happens next, and it's all pretty grim. Okay? So after they had nailed him to the cross, the soldiers gambled for his clothes, a sign fastened above Jesus' head saying, "This is the King of the Jews." And then the people were mocking him, passing by shouting, "Look at you now," they yelled. "You said you were going to destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days. Well, if you're the Son of God, save yourself and come down from the cross." So Palm Sunday looked really great. Everything was going so well. And then Good Friday, it all goes horribly wrong. Okay? They thought Jesus was going to be the king. The king to end all kingdoms. You know, the Son of David, the promised one who was going to sort everything out. And yet there he was, dead. Oops, what went wrong? Certainly a really, really big surprise. And it was a big surprise, even though Jesus had told them what was coming. You know, he knew what was coming, and he had told them, as we spoke about before. Okay, so that's a big surprise, and bad. You know, just put yourself in their shoes. They'd spent years with Jesus. He was a very, very close friend, and he was dead. Okay, that hurts. Okay, so even if you take out all the king, Messiah, going to kick out the Romans bit, the fact that their friend had been killed brutally hurt. Okay, so, you know, on Saturday, or in fact on Friday, Good Friday, the disciples would have been pretty upset, not to mention confused. Okay, they were hurting. So, the next day, Sunday, okay, and again, we know what happens, but what did the disciples expect? Well, you can be sure they did not expect this. Early on Sunday morning, the women went to the tomb, taking spices they had prepared. They found that the stone had been rolled away from the entrance, so they went in, but didn't find the body of the Lord Jesus. As they stood there, puzzled, surprise, surprise, two men suddenly appeared to them, clothed in dazzling robes. Okay, they did not expect that, because Jesus was dead. They knew what happened to dead people. They did not change. They rotted. No, think Lazarus. They tell Jesus, when he wants to take away the opening of the tomb, that's a really bad idea. He's been in there several days. It will stink. He will have rotted. You know, they knew what happened to dead people. They weren't dumb. They probably saw more death than we do, because, you know, Romans are pretty brutal, and that time was pretty brutal. They were not dumb or gullible. Okay, they were not expecting Jesus to rise from the dead. So it was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and several other women who told the disciples what had happened a few verses later. But the story sounded like nonsense to the men, so they didn't believe it. Okay, so, you know, the women go, they come back and report that Jesus is alive, and it's such a preposterous story, because dead people stay dead, that the men did not believe the women. Okay, I'm sure that happens other times, but actually, in this instance, the men were, you know, it was understandable why they didn't believe the women, because dead people stay dead. That is how it works. So the notion, just in passing, that the disciples were deluded and it was all wishful thinking that Jesus came back from the dead, if anyone tells you that, they're off their head. The disciples really did not expect Jesus to come back from the dead, even though he told them he would. Okay, so they were not expecting Jesus to come back from the dead. So they were quite confused. Okay, Jesus was supposed to be the king, but then got killed, and now he's apparently come back from the dead. Okay, and then the story goes on, and they see him a couple of times in Jerusalem. But what did they feel? What should they do? Well, confusion and pain would be two of the feelings they would have had. Confused, because they'd been walking around with Jesus for years, 3 years, and he had done astonishing things, you know, miracles and loads of amazing things, and they really, really thought he was going to be the king, the Messiah, to kick out the Romans and restore Israel. And he's dead. So they're really confused. How did it all go wrong? He's also their friend, and he's dead. Well, or is he? So are they confused or are they hurting? You know, that's going to be pretty messed up your head. So death of a friend is bad. Huge disappointment about what Jesus was supposed to do. And that disappointment is captured very nicely when the disciples are walking to Emmaus and Jesus comes alongside and they say, "We thought he was the one." The chosen one. That's a very apt illustration. Wasted on some of you? Never mind. Okay, they thought he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. Okay, you're getting it now. Well done. Yeah, keep up. They thought he was going to be the one to redeem Israel. And yet he's killed. So the disciples on the way to Emmaus are very puzzled. And yet we know that isn't quite how it turns out. So what are they going to do? these poor disciples, I mean, they've been traipsing around with Jesus, putting their lives at risk and giving up stuff. And yet he's gone. And we didn't say he's alive. And then they see him once or twice. They're puzzled, confused. So what do you do when life gets difficult? Well, maybe you shouldn't answer that right now. You're likely to go back to things that are familiar and safe. Yeah? If life is chaos, then you try and go back to some supposedly golden age, possibly, or go somewhere where things are at least a little bit predictable. So that's what the disciples do. I mean, Jesus does actually tell them to go to Galilee, but they go off to Galilee and they do what? Well, they're fishermen. So what do fishermen do? Well, they go fishing. Okay, so it's Peter's idea. I'm going fishing, he says. So if you look in some commentaries on these verses, they do, some of them suggest that Peter was kind of chucking it all in, saying, oh, Jesus is a waste of time. I'm giving up. I'm going fishing. I don't think that's at all fair. I think it was just an understandable thing. You know, what do we do now? We can't follow Jesus around because he's not here. What are we going to do? Oh, let's go back. Oh, let's go fishing. It's familiar. It's safe. And actually, not an unreasonable thing to do, because they do need to eat. I mean, which means they need to work. And what do they do for work? Well, they're fishermen, so they go fishing. It's completely understandable, given the circumstances. They go back to what they know, what's easy, familiar, and safe. And at this point, the resurrection is a little bit of a puzzle still, because although they have seen Jesus, I mean, you know, the women have, and they have, and Peter has run into the tomb and seen the empty tomb and the clothes and everything, and they saw Jesus in the upper room, it's still, where is he? What's going on? They do not understand. They really don't get the resurrection at this point. They're not convinced. Just importantly, as an aside, what do you do when life gets difficult? Do you go off on your own to things that are familiar, or do you go with your close friends? Go with your close friends. So a bunch of the disciples were together. They weren't all there, but it was more than just Peter suggesting they go fishing. Okay, so if life is a bit, go familiar and take some friends with you. That's an aside. Okay, so what happens? They're doing something safe and sensible, trying to get some sense into their lives. What do they need? What do they really, really need? Well, they need to see Jesus. He knows that, and he comes to them. And he comes to them exactly where they are. Now, that means two things. It's literally, physically where they are. They are in Galilee. They are fishing. He goes where they are. So that's fairly easy. But more importantly, psychologically, he deals with what's bothering them. He meets them exactly where they're at. Not sure that's proper English, but I hope you get it. Okay? It's not just a physical meeting where they are. It's what's bothering them. He's going to deal with that issue or those issues. Okay. And the way he does this is he reminds them of things that are familiar to them. So remember, they're fishing. That's all familiar. So that's okay. So remember, Jesus knows how to catch fish. Now, in the story we read, the disciples are on the boat, they've been fishing all night, and they haven't caught anything. I guess that might be typical for fishermen. You don't catch anything most of the time. Yeah? Yeah, most of the time. Okay, so they've been at it all night. And remember, these guys are fishing for their livelihood to eat, not because they like fishing. They've caught nothing. Jesus talks them from the beach and says, have you caught anything? And the way he asks the question, he's assuming the answer is no. Okay? Haven't you got any fish? He says. No, we haven't caught anything. So then he says, chuck the net on the other side of the boat and you'll catch some. So they do that and they haul out 153 fish. Okay, pretty successful. So, in this story, Jesus does something miraculous with the fishing. And the reason I say it's familiar, because something very similar happened before. Okay? So in, is it Luke or Matthew? Luke. Okay, one day, as Jesus was preaching on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, so this is early on in his ministry, great crowds pressed in on him to listen to the word of God. He noticed two empty boats at the water's edge, for the fishermen had left them there and were washing their nets. Stepping into one of the boats, Jesus asked Simon, that's Peter, its owner, to push it out into the water. So he sat in the boat and taught the crowds from there. When he had finished speaking to Simon, he said to Simon, "Now go out where it's deeper and let your nets down to catch some fish." It's all beginning to sound a bit familiar, is it? "Master," Simon replied, "we worked hard all last night and didn't catch a thing." Okay. "But if you say so, I'll let the nets down again." And this time their nets were so full of fish they began to tear. A shout for help brought their partners in the other boat, and soon both boats were filled with fish and on the verge of sinking. Okay, so this is at the beginning of Jesus' ministry. And even now, the disciples are working out that Jesus is someone special and clearly knows about fishing. And then, when Simon Peter realized what had happened, he fell to his knees before Jesus and said, "O Lord, please leave me. I am too much of a sinner to be around you." For he was awestruck by the number of fish they had caught, as were the others with him, his partners, James, John, the sons of Zebedee, and they were amazed. Okay, so the story we just read, the post-resurrection, is pretty reminiscent to something that happened earlier. So that would make the disciples remember, oh yeah, this person who knows how to do fishing in rather an unusual way, Jesus did that before. So remembering in times of difficulty that Jesus has the power at some previous experience in your life to do something dramatic is a good thing to do. Okay, so the example here is fishing. I guess for most of us, we don't depend on fishing, but the principle that Jesus can sort things now as he did in the past is still true. Okay, and Jesus showed that to his disciples in a very mundane, routine thing for them. They fish, they don't catch anything, Jesus can sort it. Okay, that's day-to-day life for them. And Jesus meets them in a very normal situation and shows that he is sufficient in that situation. Okay, more reminders of the familiar. So, Jesus knows how to fish, we know that. And then there's the thing about Peter getting out of the boat. Okay, can you guess what comes next? So again, earlier in the gospel, pre-crucifixion, Jesus has been preaching, big miracle, and then immediately after this, Jesus insisted that his disciples get back into the boat and cross to the other side of the lake while he sent the people home. That's the crowd he had been preaching to and had fed. After sending them home, he went up to the hills by himself to pray. Night fell while he was there alone. Meanwhile, the disciples were in trouble, far away from land, for a strong wind had risen and they were fighting heavy waves. About 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came toward them, walking on the water. When the disciples saw him walking on the water, they were terrified. In their fear, they cried out, "It's a ghost." But Jesus spoke to them at once. "Don't be afraid," he said. "Take courage, I am here." Then Peter called to him, "Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come to you, walking on the water." "Yeah, come," Jesus said. So Peter went over the side of the boat and walked on the water towards Jesus. But when he saw the strong wind and the waves, he was terrified and began to sink. "Save me, Lord," he shouted. Immediately, Jesus reached out and grabbed him. "You have so little faith," Jesus said. "Why did you doubt me?" When they climbed back into the boat, the wind stopped, and then the disciples worshipped him. "You really are the Son of God," they exclaimed. After they had crossed the lake, they landed at Gennesaret. Okay, so again, vaguely familiar. Peter's out in this boat, not that far from the shore this time. He sees Jesus at a distance, and in the walking on the water bit, okay, Jesus is walking on the water, that's rather dramatic, and Peter climbs out of the boat and walks on the water and sinks. In this story, post-resurrection, it's a little different. Jesus is on the land, but Peter is in the boat. And this time, Peter doesn't need much from Jesus to encourage him to get out of the boat. He just needs John to say, "Oh, it's the Lord, don't you realize?" And as soon as he hears that, he legs it over the side of the boat. And this time he doesn't need to walk on the water because it's shallow and he can swim. But he gets out of the boat and goes to Jesus, is the point. Now, would Peter remember walking on the water? Yeah, probably. Yeah, you do remember. You would remember that kind of thing if you had done that. He would also remember the sinking and being rescued by Jesus. So that act of getting out of the side of the boat would bring back memories of a previous experience where he had failed and Jesus had rescued him. So he had done something amazing, walk on the water for a bit. Oops, lack of faith, sinks a bit, and then Jesus rescues him. So he would remember all of that. Getting out of the boat this time, I'm pretty sure he would remember a more recent failing. So remember the whole crucifixion trial story. Jesus tells them, "You will all desert me beforehand." And they all say, all the disciples, but especially Peter, say, "Oh no, that will never happen. We will never desert you." And then what happens? Surprise, surprise, every one of them, including Peter, desert Jesus when he's arrested. And then Peter, as we all know, you know, he sort of does worse. But actually, at least he's in a position to be asked about whether he knows who Jesus is, so give him a little bit of credit for that. But when asked directly, "Do you know Jesus?" he denies even knowing him three times. So that failure, which it was, failure to recognize, failure to own up to knowing Jesus, Peter would remember that. So getting out of the boat where he had failed before, that will be familiar. But in this story, there isn't any failure. He gets to Jesus, he gets to the beach, and everything is okay. And then he's reinstated, as we'll just about touch on in a bit. Okay, so another familiar thing. The disciples' reaction to Jesus earlier is important here, because remember that the whole setting here is the disciples are in turmoil and Jesus is coming to them to meet their need, and he reminds them by his actions of previous things they have done and previous things he has done. So the disciples' reactions to the miracles of the fish earlier and the walking on the water were pretty astonishing. Peter said, "Oh Lord, leave me now, I'm too much of a sinner to be around you." And then, "You really are the Son of God." So those statements, which they made earlier in the gospel, were still true. So it's the same Jesus who is on the beach with the breakfast who they said this of. They had said, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man," more traditional translation, and "You are the Son of God." They had said that about Jesus before, and it was still true because it was the same Jesus who was standing there. Okay, so that reminder of those two events, of the fish and the walking on the water, would have reminded them of those truths too. So the same Jesus who they proclaimed as the Son of God earlier, still there, he's still the Son of God, but now he's resurrected. So if you thought that before, then you really, really should think it now, because he's resurrected. That power of the resurrection is there in Jesus. Okay, almost done. This story reveals something about Jesus and something about the disciples, particularly Peter. Okay, so if you like, it's two hearts. What's in Jesus' heart when he's doing the breakfast stuff, and what's in the disciples' heart? And then there's the question for us, what is in our hearts? Okay, so Jesus first. What does he do? He is comforting, he is reassuring, he's compassionate, he's forgiving, and he's humble. Rather unlike some of us most of the time, or most of us most of the time, possibly. You would have thought, after the resurrection, he would have, well, he did have a right to go to the disciples and say, "You idiots, this is what I told you would happen. I told you I would die, I told you I would rise from the dead. Why did you not believe me, you numbskulls?" Okay? That would be a reasonable thing to say. He told them what was going to happen, and it happened. And they didn't believe any of it. So they, you know, disciples were a bit dumb. But we can sort of understand that. But Jesus was very gracious and gentle with them. So what did they need? Did they need beating up over their failing? Did they need reminding of their failing even? No, they didn't need any of that. And Jesus didn't give them any of that hard time. He came to them in a very natural, easy setting for them, everyday life, fishing. It doesn't say fishing is bad, actually helps them out with the fishing. Okay, so he affirms what they do, comes to them in an easy setting where they're at ease and relaxed, and he is very humble and gentle with them, doesn't berate them for being dumb. And at a very practical level, they needed some fish because they would need to have their fishing business working if they were going to survive, and they needed breakfast, and he provided both fish and breakfast. Okay. So exactly what they needed, both in the physical sense, the fish and the breakfast, but much more importantly, the reassurance and the acceptance that he was still who he said he was, and even though they had goofed monumentally, he still loved them and wanted them. Okay, so no matter what they do, Jesus is still there. Okay, now disciples, Peter typically. Peter has a mouth, but he kind of articulates what many of them would have been thinking. Certainly puzzled, confused, hesitant, uncertain, probably guilty, feeling guilty because he knew that he had denied Christ three times. All the others would have known they had deserted. So, you know, Peter, as bad as the others, maybe not worse. But what does he do? As soon as he realizes it's Jesus on the beach, he's the first one, indeed the only one recorded in the story, who jumps out of the boat. So even in his need and his failure, he knows where he should go. Okay, he might have been a bit grumpy before and thinking, I'm just going to do what I know how to do, which is fishing. But when it comes down to it, when he's presented with Jesus on the beach, he doesn't have any hesitation. Well, except to put some clothes on, okay? Because he was possibly naked to do the fishing stuff. But anyway, jumps out of the boat and legs it, well, swims, I guess, to where Jesus is. So even though he is in turmoil and upset and possibly angry and almost certainly feeling very guilty, he knows Jesus is the answer. Okay. Jesus' heart, compassion, disciples, a bit confused, but Peter for sure knew that Jesus was the answer. That's his heart. What about our hearts? Do we, like Peter, jump out of the boat to get to Jesus, even when we've screwed up? Because we should. And Peter knew that Jesus was the answer, despite, or maybe even because of, his desertion. And he responded with enthusiasm. Possibly a little bit of trepidation, but certainly with enthusiasm. He didn't, you know, he was pretty unashamed about leaping over the side of the boat. So we should be a bit like Peter. Now, whether we're all the Peter type, you know, with a mouth and with enthusiasm, no, we're probably not. That's probably good. But Peter typifies and is a good example of someone responding to Christ. Okay, and we should respond with enthusiasm